So today, we are blessed with a true rock star in our presence. We've got Chris McDonald, who is the president and CEO of McDonald Consulting Group, which is an authorized licensee of Sandler Training. Now, I know, Chris, that you started your business back in 2008, but it seems like it's just always been there, even though 2008, when you say it, doesn't sound that long ago. And I have to be honest, your accolades and some of the companies you've worked with over the years is just phenomenal. You've done consulting with, you know, Fortune 500 companies. You have an international business, as well as obviously a lot of saturation here in the U.S. And honestly, as long as I've known you, it seems like you've always been successful. It's like, you know, you just woke up in the morning and bam. You've arrived.
Well,
now, obviously, we all know that businesses go through the beginnings and sometimes struggles and tough times, maybe even failures. But we really don't see it. So, I mean, was it as easy as it looks?
Well, the short answer is no.
Understood.
Absolutely. And when you think about it, especially in the beginning, I mean, I spent 20 years in corporate America. Yeah. And then all of a sudden in 2008, let's just say the financial markets were a little dicey, if you will. Just a smidge.
Just a little bit.
So I started a business in that year where a lot of people looked at me like, are you crazy to start a business right now? And part of me probably was. But my motivation to doing that was I wanted to support my family. That was very important, right?
Of course.
And B, training and development, developing people is just something that has always been very important to me.
Yeah.
Very important to me. And it went to your question of what, you know, when it comes to failure, right? You have to fail often.
Yeah.
Sorry. And you have to learn from those failures. And I think that too often leaders, including myself, when you grow in your career, we tend to forget that.
It's true.
And we have to accept failure and learn from it.
That's absolutely true. And I think a part of that is really vision. You know, the vision for the company and the vision of how you want to exit if you do exit at some point. I think people in the tech world are really good at that because they actually start with the exit strategy before they formulate the beginning.
Yeah, true.
But I know me personally, when I started my business, you know, there really wasn't a vision. It was, how do I pay my bills?
Yeah,
you know, that was the first thing. And then after you kind of get past some of those, I guess you say there's challenges up front and you start to hit milestones and goals. For me, I really realized my deficiencies as a leader. And one of those things was a long-term vision. So how do you coach people with creating vision?
Well, I think it goes back to, you mentioned deficiencies, right? And I think sometimes leaders, they tend to think of themselves as this chief problem solver. Right?
Okay.
Like their business card has CPS, Chief Problem Solver, right? They think, I need to create all this vision. I need to do this. I need to be the smartest person in the room.
Hmm.
That can backfire.
Absolutely.
It can backfire dramatically. For example, if from a leader, from a perspective, if they're in this vacuum and say, well, I'm going to create the best thing and create this vision, but not getting feedback from team members and not allowing their team members to be creative, mm-hmm. to think on their own. Like if someone comes up to a leader and asks a question, sometimes a leader can just flex their muscles and answer it. Versus saying, you know what, if I wasn't here right now, what would you do?
Fair enough.
Right? And getting them to think. And that goes into anything, processes, operation, vision, whatever it is. And it needs to be aligned.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's difficult for the business owner or the CEO sometimes because many times the people that work under that person, they don't want to bring the deficiencies to their boss. So sometimes, you know, it's hard as a leader to identify your own deficiencies. Well, unless you're married. If you're married, you don't have
a lot. Right,
exactly.
Right.
But I mean, how do you coach people to identify those things when there's really no one above them and the people under them don't want to bring it up?
Accepting criticism is hard, right? For anybody, you know, and we all have to think about how we accept feedback, right? And we all have filters for feedback. Like I've been with married and with my wife for 30 years, been together for 33. And there are certain times where I still don't take feedback well from her, believe it or not, but she's the closest person in my life.
Yes.
Right. And, but from a feedback perspective, one of the toughest things is, matter of fact, let me digress for a second. There's an awesome video on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And it's called Blue Angels Debriefing.
Interesting.
And anyone out there, I suggest it's a four-minute video. It's a little bit dated, but it's awesome. And the whole process with the Blue Angels, they have a specific pre-flight checklist, mm-hmm. very important, and then post, which is more important. And what they say is rank doesn't matter. You have to be wide open for feedback. You have to be wide open, more importantly, for criticism. And when you watch that video, it just allows you to think about why it's so important to accept criticism. And a lot of times we can't accept it because we're looking to get our own self-esteem and self-worth needs met by getting feedback on our role performance. Leaders need to coach their team members through that.
I see.
But it starts with the leader to have an atmosphere where criticism is good.
Yeah, it's good.
And it's not easy.
So for all you people out there in YouTube world, I'll make sure we put a link to that video on this particular. That way you can just click on it and be good to go.
Awesome.
I'm definitely looking forward to looking at that particular video.
Very cool.
So when you started your business back in 2008, I don't know if you hired a bunch of people right away or if it was just you and a handful of people. Who really helped you figure out some of those things where you need to improve?
Well, I was very fortunate, Steve, to have a lot of really good mentors in my life. And there were some from the corporate world that I could still tap into and learn from. And one of my mentors, there's a phrase that I use to this day quite often. And he told me, from a leadership perspective, what you ignore becomes more. Hmm. That has always stuck with me.
What you ignore becomes more.
Think about that, right?
Yeah.
So if you, as a leader, would help me, there are certain things in the business I was growing, it's like, well, I'll deal with that tomorrow. Well, there's a reason I said that, because maybe I didn't want to have a tough conversation with somebody.
Fair enough.
Or maybe I didn't do whatever. But what you ignore becomes more. Then if we ignore it and it goes too long, well, then we think maybe the problem just goes away. Go back to the quote, what you ignore becomes more.
That's right.
So I was very fortunate to have some really good mentors in my life as well. I'm very fortunate.
God, does any one particular person stand out?
There were several. One in particular is one of the leaders I had at Citigroup, and just the ability when I became a vice president at Citigroup, and I had a lot of responsibility, and I was put into a situation where I was actually the youngest regional manager at the time, with about 180 employees. There was some self-doubt that I had, right, from a standpoint of being in that position.
I can imagine.
Well, this leader was just incredible, and he helped me get work through a lot of my own head trash that I had, and I had plenty of it.
Right.
And a couple of years later, I took that region to be one of the best in the company. So that was very rewarding, and I give him a lot of credit.
That's pretty cool. So here you are at Citi. You've got 180 people under you, VP status. And obviously the economy and the financial world started to have its issues. Mm-hmm. That had to be pretty scary for you.
It was. You know, things that, happened to other people, hey, that'll never happen, to me.
Yeah.
All of a sudden in that world, all of a sudden it was just a very challenging time, without a doubt, in the financial market. So,
yeah.
And I found myself in a situation that I never thought I'd be in. But you know what it taught me? It taught me a number of things. Number one, humbleness.
Yeah, absolutely.
And to be used to be and how to get comfortable with being very uncomfortable.
Absolutely.
Right? And then a platform to grow. So yeah. It was very interesting, challenging, and looking back, fun times too. In some ways.
I bet. So we were we had someone a while back do a video cast with us, a guy I think Marty Schwartz. I think you know Marty pretty well.
Very well, yeah.
And Marty, him and I talked a lot about coaching. And I think this is a lot of the same things. You're coaching people. You're helping people improve themselves, understand that sometimes failure isn't a bad thing. And the idea came up of what the difference is between leading, coaching, and managing. And when do you have to change the hat And when do you, you know, when do you really respond to the questions of your employees in the best possible way? Have you ever thought about it that way?
Oh yeah, very much so, Steve. And it's the challenge is leaders typically have four hats, right? They have a supervisor hat, a coaching hat, a mentor hat, and a trainer hat, right? So all four of those hats. And the problem is sometimes when a leader works with a team member, they may think they have their coaching hat on, right? Well, I'm going to go coach this person. But instead, they have their supervisor hat on, and they go in and basically tell the person what to do. All right, you got that? We're good? All right, good. That's not going to happen again. They walk away thinking everything's going to be great. However, one person thought they were coaching the leader, and the other person was just used to getting their normal supervision. So it's both parties have to be aligned. And it's up to the leader to have a conversation stating the agenda of the meeting, talking about what's going on. And to your point, where it really boils down with coaching, Steve, is it's either ability or motivation or both.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So ability, skill sets, you know, company knowledge, understanding all the different things in the skill sets. Then there's motivation, right? Want and will to do the job, comfort zones, time management, all those things. So leaders have to be able to ask questions to determine which is the issue. And sometimes, Steve, it's a trap that we can fall into. They might say, a leader might say, I've said, we probably all said it, that person's not motivated. Well, I disagree. They're motivated. They may not be motivated to do what you need them to do with the company, but they're motivated.
There's a motivation somewhere.
Somewhere. Yeah. It's just going to the right. And so there's a process that we use to really dive into that communication strategy and coaching strategy to work through the ability factors and motivation factors, then work on a coaching plan.
Okay.
And it's it could take a lot of twists and turns, but it's up to the leader to ask the right questions.
Absolutely. And all that, I think, really speaks to company culture, right? If your leaders are willing to take that step to improve themselves and really dedicate themselves to making sure that they're doing the right things, it has to affect the culture, and it has to affect employee retention and engagement. Do you think that's true?
Without a doubt. And obviously, over the last couple of years with COVID, that has, an understatement, has really changed the way people look at culture. Right. There's some leaders, right or wrong, that might say, well, I can't wait till everything goes back to the way it was pre-COVID. We're just going to go back to everything the way. I'm not sure that's the right choice. If you think about the lessons learned, what have we learned during these times as far as our culture? And I think the other thing in culture is like, for example, hey, we're going to throw these Friday pizza parties and that's what we're going to do and everyone's going to love it. Well, everyone may not love it.
Right? That's true.
I mean, sometimes a good pepperoni pizza is good, but I mean, it's not going to really understand what's going on. So I think the last thing on that with culture is that sometimes the statement out there we've all heard, it starts at the top. Problem with that, sometimes it stays at the top.
That's a good point.
Right? So what about inverting that and thinking about, you know, what's going on in the ranks of our organization? Are we facilitating the right conversations? Are we all working for the same reason? It's like planting a garden. You know, if you're planting a garden at your home and you plant it, it looks awesome, the mulch is out there. And then if you don't touch it for 6 months, what's it look like?
Well, you, if you go by my house, you'll see it.
It happens, right?
It does.
So, but it has to be continually pruned and worked on, and you can't just, you have to be involved.
Absolutely. Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that sometimes culture can stay at the top. And you've worked with a number of large organizations, Fortune 500 companies. Do you think a culture supersedes or basically saturates a company completely? Or do certain departments have their own cultures because they have their own leader?
That's a great question. And you know, and I'll answer that in one way. It depends. It depends on the company.
Okay.
Right? It depends on the company. If it's a company that has operations and they have field employees, technicians, whatever it is, there's going to be different leaders that have different responsibilities depending on the customer engagement levels and et cetera. Now, at the very top of the vision and mission, that should be pretty consistent.
Okay.
Right? I mean, the vision of the company, the mission, like how we're interacting with our customers, internal customers and external.
Yeah.
Because sometimes we kind of forget about those internal customers, which are, are critically important. But from a cultural perspective, yeah, there might be different mindsets, different traditions, different cultures and different divisions, but they all have that same vision.
Okay.
And that mission that they can go back to.
So I'm a believer that every company has a culture. It's not something that if you ignore, you just don't have one. Either culture is built, you know, purposefully because of the vision and the leadership at the top, or it's built just simply because people do their own thing. And sometimes cultures are built inadvertently and they have a negative effect. Have you seen that happen?
Well, yeah. When you say inadvertently, almost like maybe is there no purpose behind it or
well, I think culture is really the sum of the parts of leadership.
Okay.
Okay. So when you think about vision and you think about employee engagement and all those buzzwords that came out over the last, you know, say decade or so, all of those things create the culture. And if you're not doing those things with purpose, your culture is then not created with purpose. And sometimes it can be a little bit of a hindrance.
It can. And I think to your point, is everyone aligned with that culture, and is it on purpose versus inadvertently? And I think the second thing is, can team members in that organization, can they tie their own personal goals into the company goals, right? Are they aligned? So their personal goals of whatever it is, will the company help them achieve that? And is it are their goals aligned? And sometimes that's not easy.
No, it definitely isn't. But to your point, it affects everything.
Absolutely.
Today, I mean, there's labor shortages. We've talked about the Great Recession over and over again in the media, and the Great Resignation. And you know, in keeping your employees is just as important as ever today as it ever has been. So, what are some of the tips that you would recommend leaders to do to make sure that their employees are happy and healthy, especially if they're in a virtual world where they can't see them?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's tough. And I think one of the biggest things that we see, and with our clients, and what we see out there in the business world, is there needs to be clear career progression. Right? No matter how big the company is, there has to be clear, transparent career progression. And I think the biggest thing, Steve, and this is different than in the past, that the ladder doesn't always have to go up, right? It doesn't, I mean, and I think in the past we were, it's like, oh, what do I need to do to get to that next level up? And maybe sometimes work themselves into a management position they never wanted.
Ah, interesting.
Right? So are they clear with their own goals? So companies that I'm seeing today are realizing that career progression can be sideways. It can be this way. It can be that way. The ladder doesn't have to go like that. But it can be, I want to learn how to do this part of the business, or I want to be in this part of the business. And companies that are really understanding that, I think, will be much more well insulated in the Great Resignation that we're in now versus kind of traditional, what can I do to work my way up?
Fair enough. You know, it's actually funny you mentioned that. I think it was last week I was speaking to someone because, you know, Super Bowl was coming up and whatnot. And they mentioned that the management gets paid of a fraction of the players.
Oh, yeah.
And everyone assumes in corporate America that the way to get to the next level is going into management. And sometimes that's not the case.
No.
And it all depends on your definition of success, too.
Right.
Some people, you know, they not – definition of success might not be driven by finances.
No. And to your point, it goes back to goal setting and companies that engage and encourage their team members to do personal goal setting. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that they have to, hey, here's only personal goals. I mean, they can share what they want to share. But another quote that one of my mentors told me a long time ago, if you don't have your own personal goals, you will automatically default to somebody else's. And then sometimes people find themselves in a career where they're like, okay, we need you to do this, we need you to do this. And they're just, and all of a sudden they're like, wait a second, what's going on? Because they were never really thought about their own goals.
Yeah. Now I'm just curious. So you're in this industry where you help people through that process. How well do you do it for yourself?
Great question. The cobbler in the shoes, right?
Exactly.
Like, what's going on? You know what? There's times where I'm always, you look at yourself and you think, okay, is this an imposter syndrome? Am I truly doing this myself? And I ask that all the time. And on our team, we ask that. And we have to do everything we can to make sure, you know, that we are not just do as I say and not as I do. And it's not easy. Hmm. It's not easy. So understanding the vision and mission and us on our team challenging each other to do that, is it perfect? Heck no. It'll never be perfect. Yeah. But we are always looking to get better.
Yeah.
And we're always looking to get to that next level. And that's really important.
Well, I think that ties directly into the purpose of what we're doing right now. We want to help people get better, and we're happy to do it any way we can, just by, you know, talking. So, Chris, it's been a great pleasure to have you.
Likewise.
I really appreciate you making the time to come out, and hopefully we can have you again soon.
Would love it. Thank you so much, Steve.
Thanks.
Appreciate it.